Well, now, who is that?
Me.
I first heard those voices on the internet, the American memory site of the Library of Congress. Hours of recordings of square dances, stories, and songs. Two young speech professors from City College of New York, Robert Sonkin and Charles Todd, made these records in California at the government camp set up for migrant farm workers, the same camps John Steinbeck wrote about in The Grapes of Wrath. Charles Todd still thinks about the people he met there back in 1940.
All right, we're all here in the recreation hall at the Shafter camp, and we're going to get together and sing a song just to test out this machine.
The recordings were made in the summer of 1940 in California. We went from Visalia in the north all the way down to Brawley in the south. There were 12 of these huge camps out there, and we went to all of them.
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from? Cotton Eye Joe. Come from the city, I come from the show. Come from a place called Cotton Eye Joe.
Migratory labor camps, sponsored by the Farm Security Administration, one of Mr. Roosevelt's many organizations that got us through the Depression. Well, the migration began as a result of the terrible dust storms that hit the Oklahoma and Arkansas and the panhandle of Texas back in around 1936 and 37. And it caused what became known as the Dust Bowl.
It come what we call a red dust storm. It's come from the west. Tore the roofs off of the larger buildings and small buildings, blowed them completely away and turned cars over, and the dust was so thick that you could see nothing at all, just dark as it could possibly be.
Such a huge black cloud, just looked like smoke out of a train stack or something. And we had to tie wet rags over our mouth just to keep from smothering. And we had cattle, it killed them, they was out in there. And we'd cut their lungs open, and it looked just like a mud pack or something.
500 or 600 chickens, they all starved to death, or a large percent of them. 2 or 3 cows starved to death. So I told the folks in the spring, I says, the way everything's turned out, and money's so hard to get.
Ready, are we?
I says, I guess we'll just load up and leave out. I've just worried my head off for the last 5 or 6 years trying to make everything meet, and I'm getting tired of the worry.
Going down that road feeling bad, I'm going down that road feeling bad. I'm going down that road feeling bad, Lord, Lord, that ain't gonna be treated this away.
It were mostly people of English, Irish, and Scotch descent who came over here generations ago, and when the Dust Bowl came, the people in California, the farmers out there, began to send bulletins saying that there were a lot of jobs in California, pea picking, grape picking, so forth. As a result, 300,000 came instead of what they were hoping for, about 2,000 or so. But California got a little petrified and scared to death with this huge influx of migrants coming in. It was far more than they could use or take.
When I left Oklahoma, I was walking, me and my wife and 2 babies. We come into Texas and we got us an old rattletrap car.
Of course, we didn't have the money to just say, well, let's buy a ticket and we'll go to California. So we had to work our way. So from Dallas, Texas, we went on out to Clovis, New Mexico.
I loaded up my personal belongings into a little house trailer that I bought, 15 foot long, 7 foot wide, hooked it on behind a Model A Ford, and we started to Yakima, Washington. While traveling through the country and going over the mountains at Grand Island, Nebraska, our house trailer came unhooked, went over a mountainside, and destroyed practically everything that we had except our Model A Ford.
Poor gal, she does the same. My gal, she rides in a D Model Ford, but she's riding just the same. She'll be coming around the mountain, charming Betsy. She'll be coming around.
The next morning I says to the wife, we've got 52 cents. We've got to get out and get us a job. Wife and I and boy loaded in our personal belongings and drove for 8 continual hours, stopping at every ranch, hunting for something to do. We went and run onto a rancher who wanted someone to spray. My boy and I had never sprayed an apple tree in our life or never knew anything about it, but he was man enough to offer us a job at 30 cents an hour, moved us into a little cabin which you could throw a cat through the roof. The stove was just about ready to fall down, the cook stove. We moved into it and slept on the floor, wife and I and boy, for a week while we sprayed to get enough money so that we could live decently. We sprayed there for 18 weeks and my rheumatism got so bad that the doctor advised me that I'd better come to California or else go back home and get ready to die.
If I never get to see you again, good Lord, remember.
Started this poem in 1939, May the 4th, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and started in California. In that dear state of Oklahoma, in the city where buildings are high, I laid on my pillow so hopeless, looking through my tin shack at the sky. I got up early next morning, out in the cold I did creep, walked off without any breakfast, and left 2 hungry babies asleep. And then I left that big city, I walked down 60 Highway, I had a good reason for leaving, so I headed for Pacific Bay. Then I seen the Texas cotton and the Mexico bottomless lakes and the Arizona Gila monster and the big diamond rattlesnakes. One night I heard the little coyotes. I listened to their pitiful whine. I wondered if the poor little creatures didn't have hungry babies like mine. I started this poem on a desert, my bed lying out on the ground, then covered up my hungry babies and smoked a cigarette and laid down. Then I picked peas in California from 2 to 6 hampers a day, trying to make a few pennies to drive that old hungry away. Oklahoma, farewell.
And we stopped off in New Mexico and worked for the snow range. Picked cotton for 75 cents a hundred. Mostly Mexicans, and the contractors beat you out of the little cotton you'd pick, so we started on for Arizona.
The living condition in Arizona is mighty bad for a worker on a farm. Where you sleep on the ground, you know, we're just treated as mules and hardly as good as mules because they think a whole lot of the mules. And
then we come on over in California in 38, and at that time came quite a flood here in California. And we landed on Point Conception, farthest point west, picking peas, and people was just about starved to death, and no way to get any groceries. And people would go down to the preacher, and the preacher had a mother who had some money, and she borrowed it in to him, and he would take 6-shooters, old tires, anything you could pawn for a little money to buy groceries with. And that went on for 2 or 3 weeks, till the peas got ready to pick, and got dry enough to pick, and people went out and they never cleared any money, just enough to barely get away from there. And then we went on up north to Winters, California, and picked almonds, peaches, pears.
In the beginning, before the government put in the Farm Security Administration migrant camps, before that, they went in what they called the ditch bank camps, which were just tents that had been put up by the farmers in the ditch banks. They were a lot of malnutrition. The kids, little tow-headed kids, were in pretty bad shape with pellagra and other diseases, malnourishment mostly. Great many of the people died from asthma and other lung diseases, and they were in terrible shape when they arrived in California, most of them.
But left to me, oh kids, I came out here one day. Spent all my money getting here, now I can't get away.
It was all a big emergency situation, and the Farm Security Administration just had to build these camps. People were suffering in California.
It rained the whole night long, boys, thought we all would drown. We all got the flu from sleeping on the ground.
They put in 12 of them in California, and each one took about 2,000 or 3,000 people.
Now let's do me, okay, I'll hand it to you straight. I came out here 8 weeks ago and I haven't worked a day. But now I'm on relief, 'cause I guess I've done my best. It wasn't for old Uncle Sam, I guess we started dead.
This is a song that was composed in the 1939 Arvin Cotton strike. Three strikers composed this song, including myself. The title is Associated Farmers Have a Farm. Associated Farmers Have a Farm, E-I-E-I-O.
They had a group known as the Associated Farmers. They were convinced that this was a communist plot. Let me read you just one thing that was said that I took down verbatim. The whole proposition is communist through and through. It stinks of Russia. Our women won't be safe on the streets with these people. We never wanted this camp in here. White men are no good in our business. We like our Mexicans. They don't complain. And they don't ever do any organizing. As for those bulletins which they said we sent out to get those migrants here, they're the work of the Communist Party. We've checked on it. The Reds are burrowing from within. You know how they work.
And every day we
I picked that up from a mayor of one of the towns down in Brawley, California, down Imperial Valley. I went and called on him to get his reactions, and he was pretty angry about everything. They were angry at me, too. I was asking too many questions.
In those ranches, it got to be that if we talked back or even sang in the orchards or talked, you know, with somebody else picking around there, both would come up to us and tell us, you better shut up, you're not supposed to sing or you're not supposed to whistle, you're not supposed to do anything, like peons. That's what gets all the people here all bothered, because right now they have work, most of them have work, but they haven't got any money to rent a house with. And the first money they start earning, they have to pay it for food. So how do you expect them to pay rent?
This is Mary Campbell.
This is Betty Campbell.
We're from the Shafter Government Camp. We're going to sing the government camp song.
Written by us.
It was written by my sister and I.
Over here in the government camp, that's where we get our government stamps. Over in that little rag house home. Over in the isolation, that's where we get our vaccinations. Over in that little rag house home.
And the government camps that we live in, that the government has never spent a dollar that's done people more good than these government camps. Not even money that's been loaned to railroads and big corporations. I don't think it's helped the country anymore. It's put more enjoyment in life for people than these here country camps.
It's pitiful the way we see some people come in here in the wintertime, have nothing, just sleep on the floors. Just floor. And maybe a few, well, if they had some of them that had a car, they'd get the cushions out of their cars and lay down on them. Because the tents would leak, and the water would run in, so they'd get themselves off of the floor and try to keep dry in that way. And then we had a lot of sickness, and the ones that were on the sick committee, like myself, I was on the sick committee, we'd make the rounds every morning in each unit, and if there was anyone that needed medical care, they were turned in at the clinic, at the nurse. So everything fared well. We've lost only a very few cases. Everything was taken care of very nicely.
They began as just tent camps, then metal shelters, and you would get a family of seven or eight people in one room metal shack. But they had excellent recreation facilities and a big hall for entertainment, and even had a library. And when I was doing my recordings, each camp had its own little newspaper put out by the Okies.
The music is furnished by the King Family Orchestra that played with the Grace of Wrath moving picture. These folks are nationally known in all the camps all over California, Arizona, and whatnot. All right, let's go.
The King family, yes, the King family was the nearest thing to a professional group the Okies had, and we found them in one of the camps. They did a lot of very strange variations on 200-year-old ballads.
Folks, this is the King family playing on some instruments that we made ourselves out of some gourds, like we might call them soap gourds or powder gourds or whatever the old-time gourds might have been. So we have some instruments. Harlan playing the guitar, Charles playing the mandolin, Sid playing the violin, and the tenor banjo myself, Billy playing the bass violin. So here we go with the Gordy.
The camp manager would get on the loudspeaker and announce that there'd be an event in the social hall that night. They were going to record some music and play some music and so forth. Saturday nights was a terrific night. They had a huge dance, and it was line dancing and square dance, and a very good band, orchestra made up by the Okies themselves. And it was usually fiddle and guitar and banjo and mouth organs, but it was just old-time country music.
The name of this song is Cotton Fever. It was written by an Arvin Camper during last season's Cotton.
It was a Presto machine called a Presto recorder.
Along the road on either side, cotton's green, 2 miles wide.
And it was a very cumbersome thing, and about 50 pounds or so. And it had aluminum discs covered with acetate.
First don't get my swing right up.
We had records that were acetate on cardboard, too. And we would always, after we recorded somebody on regular records, we would do one on cardboard that they could play themselves and keep. So that helped. And we had them fighting to be heard. Had no trouble getting them to record at all. And they loved looking at the machine. The kids were absolutely unbelievably excited about it.
This one's a frog. Right turn.
It was a very primitive outfit. Sometimes it would stick, get stuck. It would do all kinds of strange things.
No.
And it was just like a regular Victrola. Chicken. You put the disc down, the big recording, it looked just like a phonograph record. Put it on the machine, turn the machine on, the record went around, and the needle cut the grooves in the recording, and it made the recording. There was no tape at all.
Barbara Allen. All in the merry month of May, when the green buds lay, were swelling, young Jimmy Gray on his deathbed lay for the love of Barbara Allen.
And as I was walking through the Okie camp, I heard a woman singing, and I recognized what she was singing. It was an old 17th century ballad called Barbara Allen. I asked where she had learned that. She said from her mother.
If your name be Barbara Allen.
And I began to ask around about it, and I found that dozens of people who knew these old songs that were 100 more years old.
Oh, the old apple tree in the orchard, it lives in my memory, 'cause it reminds me of my pappy. He was handsome, young, and happy when he planted the old apple tree. So one day, Pappy took Widder Norton out on a jamboree. And when he brought her home, that son of Brother Norton raised his gun up and he chased Pappy up in the tree.
And the fact that we were working for the government, the Library of Congress, we sort of hinted to the Okies that whoever we were recording, that probably a good many people in Washington, D.C. would hear the stories that they told and hear their music and so forth, and it might be helpful to the Okies. And so the Okies sang like the devil and did a lot of telling of stories.
When the neighbors came after my pappy, up in the tree was he. The neighbors took a rope and strung him by the neck, and then they hung him to a branch on the old apple tree.
Where'd you land that one?
In Oklahoma.
And sure enough, we did play these records, all of them, for Mrs. Roosevelt at the White House. We were invited there and played them, so I haven't felt guilty about all that.
This is an old song that I learned from my daddy. Little old man come in from the plow, dandoo, dandoo.
They're very good, and that woman, Mrs. Pike, the one who sang dandoo, it was a lovely voice.
Little old man come in from the plow, said old woman got dinner ready now, blurred, blurred, black, dago.
I was amazed at the number of good guitar players. Practically everyone we ran into had a guitar stashed away somewhere.
Piece old dry bread laying on the shelf. Tommy Clash, Tom Klingo. Piece old dry bread laying on the shelf. If you want any dinner, you can cook it yourself. Blair and blue and black a dago.
Yes, it was, I remember it all very well. And it was very moving business, the whole thing.
Over at the sewing room, it needs a woman and a broom. Over by the little rag house home, over where we cook and can, we hope someday we get a man. Over in that little rag house home, we are proud of government camp. That's where we get our government stamps. Over by that little rag house home.
That's fine.